Revelation 20, the title, Hot Stuff, and that's not a mistype, that is a single word. So it's not the combination of words that we're used to when we see those two. On the next slide, I am going to show you what I believe to be the most dangerous and the scariest image in history. And it's based on what Chad read for us in Revelation 20, very loosely. So I want you to mentally prepare yourself for this image. No? If I had to guess, I even heard a few, more smiles and chuckles than shudders. So here's the real pick. Now I want you to understand I'm not kidding. That is the scariest picture in our culture. You may have smiled again. You may have chuckled again. You may think I've really lost my mind when I say that. But the fact that that picture is not scary to most of us. The fact that that is the image we think of when we think of this character in Revelation 20. The fact that it is cute, endearing, funny is what makes it dangerous. It's what makes it terrifying. And here I want to explain that. When we hear the devil, when we hear the name Satan, an image similar to, and by the way, that devil's name is Hot Stuff. He came out in 1957. In a comic book. The fact that we see an image similar to that, or a child in a devil's costume for Halloween, the fact that those generally pop into our minds, and that's thanks to cartoon artists like Warren Kramer who created Hot Stuff. What that means is our image of Satan began shifting, thanks to these guys, from a biblical image of an enemy to a mischievous little cutie. There was actually a couple that came out a little bit earlier than Warren's in the late 1930s, but his hit print and went across the nation. When I searched for images of the devil, one of the first three results that Google produced was how to draw a devil cute. Now then, there's reason for the components of that image. It's a combination of different sources, specifically Christian sources and Greek mythology, but then there's some late medieval stuff there as well. The horns are taken from the image of the beast in Revelation 13 and verse 18. And yet we just read in chapter 20 that Satan and the beast were two different things because they were both cast into the pit. The hooves actually come from the goat feet of the Greek god Pan, who's known for his lust. The tail, again, the Bible, dragon, in Revelation 12. The pitchfork is attributed to the Greek god Hades. And the red tights are a combination of medieval actors who wore red tights when they played Satan in morality plays, and the drawings of Walt Disney. Here's the thing. Somehow, when we add these components together, we get this. we get Hot Stuff. We get Donald Duck. We get Kronk. Instead of this. And yet to me, that or that or that is a much closer resemblance to what I just read as I was reading along with Chad than a cartoon character. The problem with that transition is explained by C.S. Lewis in the Screwtape Letters. And this is said from the viewpoint of one of Satan's demons. And he writes, "The fact that devils are predominantly comic figures in the modern imagination will help you," talking to the other demons. "If any faint suspicion of your existence begins to arise in his mind, suggest to him a picture of something in red tights and persuade him that since he cannot believe in that," and then he makes the parenthetical statement, "it is an old textbook method of confusing them, he therefore cannot believe in you." Therefore, a comedic devil, a cartoonish devil like Hot Stuff, has done a couple of things. Number one, it's made it harder for some to believe in Satan. In a true demon being that is opposed to God and opposed to mankind, the antithesis of God. It's also made it harder for anyone who does believe to take him seriously. It's really hard to take the devil seriously if every time I think of him, he's in a child's Halloween costume. Or he's cute and adorable and oh so cuddly. So I want to reintroduce you for the next few minutes to the real deal. A lot of flipping this morning, a lot of catching up with Scripture. But to help out, I'll post them as well. We're going to start in Revelation 20. And no, as you were reading it, you may have thought, oh, we're going to talk about a thousand-year reign. Or what it is not. We're going to talk about the casting into the pit. And I'll, very simply, verse 20. "He took hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and he bound him for 1,000 years. A dragon is an image of power. They are magical in mythology. They spout fire. Their scales are almost like armor. And they're fought by heroes in the old stories. They're set up as the ultimate enemy to slay, to prove your heroism. And so Satan is connected to that image by God. Something to be feared. Something with tremendous power, the ability to destroy. The serpent, all the way back to Genesis 3, the first image we get of him. Cunning. Poisonous, the enemy of man. It's not most people's favorite critter to have as a pet. The devil means slanderer or accuser. If you turn back to chapter 12 and verse 10, he is our accuser. He's the one that goes before God and tries to say, this is what he did and this is what she did. And God has to say, I didn't see it because of the blood of the Lamb. And then the actual title or name, Satan, means adversary. It's used more than any other. It's used 52 times. He's literally called our adversary in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. And we'll come back to that one in a second. So understand, he's not on our side. He's not our friend. He's not cute and cuddly. He's cunning and poisonous and powerful and opposed to both man and God. Revelation 12 and verse 9, the great dragon was thrown down. The serpent of old is called the devil and Satan. Now I'm going to add one to that, or to those four, who deceives the whole world. His angels were thrown down with him. Deceiver of the whole world. Again, we'll come back to that, but I just do not connect that with a comic book cover or a Walt Disney cartoon. Isaiah 14 and verse 12, how you have fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn. The King James has the term Lucifer. Literally in Hebrew, it is shining one. And then the second description, son of the dawn. Satan had a bright beginning. He's an angel in God's court. Everything that God created was good. At the end of that sixth day, behold, it was all very good. So God didn't create evil. And so what you have in Satan is a being that was created good, but with free will. And he chose to fall. His arrogance, his desire to rule, his desire to usurp the authority of God and lead others to do the same. Matthew 4 and verse 3. And the tempter came and said to him, new title, tempter. The one who's after us. The one who is that cunning serpent who can trick and deceive and slide up beside us when we're not expecting him. And yet he's bold enough to challenge the Son of God. There's nothing cute or funny about that. If that's not terrifying, we're missing something. Tempter. The one who has at his fingertips the arsenal of a world to distract us, to pull us aside, to lead us astray. Matthew 9, verse 34, the Pharisees were saying he cast out the demons by the ruler of the demons. Ruler of the demons. Now see, we play with the image of Satan or the devil. But you've probably been introduced to enough horror movies that we don't play with the image of a demon. And yet, this one is given credit for being in charge of them. Sounds like a disconnect to me. Matthew 12, 24, the Pharisees heard it and they said, this time they're going to use a different title. Cast out demons only by Beelzebul, the ruler of the demons. Let me give you something a little humorous about that word Beelzebul. The Pharisees say it means he's the ruler of the demons. Does anybody know the literal translation of that word? It means ruler or lord of dung. Not a whole lot of good connected with that, is it? But again, he's in charge of demons. The ones that we see in the New Testament that are possessing people and having to be cast out. Matthew 13, verse 19. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes. Evil one. We don't like to call a lot of things evil. Strong word. Jesus didn't hesitate. If you've never been introduced to Hot Stuff in his comic book back in 1957, Hot Stuff was mischievous, but not evil. And he actually spent a lot of time aggravating his other demon buddies by doing good things every once in a while. Someone who's evil all the way through does not do good things on occasion. John 8 and verse 44, Jesus addressing those scribes and Pharisees, those guys that are giving him so much trouble. You are of your father, the devil. And so we have our subject matter. You want to do the desires of your father. They're supposed to be religious leaders. So you would think he was talking about going in a good direction, and yet there's the devil in there. So who is he? Well, he was a murderer from the beginning. He murdered Adam and Eve's souls. He murdered Cain through the acts of, or married, murdered Abel through the act of Cain. Goes on to say he doesn't stand in the truth. There is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks, it's a lie. He speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Murderer, liar, father of lies, incapable of telling the truth. So at no point is there anything good in him. He threw that out in Isaiah. He threw that out when he chose to fall. John 14 and 20, I will not speak much more with you, for the ruler of... I hope this gets really scary really fast. The ruler of the world is coming. He has nothing. We're not connected in any way. Nothing in me. Ruler of the world. 1 John 5 and verse 19 uses the idea the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. Ephesians 2 and verse 2, prince of the power of the air. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4, God of this world. Now then, I need you to understand this part. It's still scary. He is not the power. He doesn't sit on the throne as ruler of the universe. That's God's throne. But what is scary is even God gives him credit that he sits on the thrones of most people's hearts. And he rules this world. He doesn't rule the kingdom that's in this world, but he rules everybody else. And he does so because, I said it would come back to you, do you remember Revelation 12 and verse 9 earlier? He's the deceiver of the whole world. He rules not by power, not by authority, not by the fact he's been given a throne. He rules by deception. He rules by trickery. Satan is able to fool, trick, deceive, anyone and everyone who is not attentive, who is not armed, and who is not aligned with Jesus. Which means for us, if we let our guard down for a moment, he does the same. Adam and Eve were aligned with God. God would come and walk in the garden with them. They were armed. Do not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But Eve was not very attentive. The cunning one slid up beside her and whispered his lies in her ear. And we fell. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 14 adds understanding to that because it says, no wonder even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Oh, so Satan, in essence, inspired Hot Stuff's drawing. Because all of a sudden now he's cute and he's cuddly and he's an angel of light. He's a master of disguise. You go to your front door and answer the knock, and there's a demon like what we looked at earlier standing on the other side. You bar the door. But when you turn the TV on and Satan comes in your house as money or wealth or beauty or power or entertainment, we throw the door open wide and say, come on in. Which one's more effective? 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, be of a sober spirit, be alert. Your adversary, there's another one of those words we looked at, the devil prowls about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Roaring lion, predator, devouring, ferocious. We get the image of a lion. We have National Geographic. We have the Nature Channel. We have the Animal Planet. Revelation 9 and verse 11, they have as a king over them the angel of the abyss. The one that fell from heaven, verse 1 in that chapter, connects to Isaiah 14 and verse 12. The bright and shining one connects to Lucifer. And he's out to destroy. Nothing difficult today. Nothing that should really be news to you. If you've ever perused that book, even in the shallowest of ways, you've been introduced to this guy. And he's never funny. He's never cute. He's never cuddly. But as simple as all of this has been, I hope and I pray that you understand that it is so important that you should have been hanging on every word. But you see, there's a couple more words that are given to him. One of them's Apollyon. One is Abaddon. Do you know what they mean? They mean destroyer. They mean destruction. Satan is that two-year-old that could tear up an anvil with a rubber mallet. He doesn't create. He doesn't build. He destroys. He's the spark in the dynamite factory. He levels everything in his path. So I want to finish this morning with a few questions. And then I'm going to make a final statement. Which one of those images in Scripture, the liar, the tempter, the devil, the evil one, the accuser, the roaring lion, the demon, the ruler of demons, the ruler of one who has beings that come out of the pit like locusts and sting like scorpions and eat us alive? Understand, it's all imagery. There's nothing literal in Revelation after chapter 3, really, until you get to the very end. But which one of those is cute? Which one of those do you want to take home with you? Which one do you want to carry around in your pocket as you go about your business? Which one's cartoonish? Which one's funny? Which one's benign? I hope the answer to all of these is none of these. God didn't draw cartoons. God didn't paint cute pictures. But here is the thing you have to get this morning. Until we get this, until we get the fact that Satan's not cute and funny and cartoonish in a costume, until we get the fact that this has to be taken out of our minds, until we do get it out of our minds, and we replace it with something closer to this, we will never, and I mean absolutely never, take him seriously enough. And if we do not take him seriously enough, we will always be in danger. That demon had crawled out of the pit in his natural form and approached Eve in the garden, should have run for her life. But he didn't. He's smarter than that. If this study's not enough to introduce you to him and scare you to death, make you take him seriously, I want you to take a look at the cross. God takes him so seriously that he sent his son to die to rescue you from his hold, to save you from the power. He's not all powerful by any stretch of the imagination. The roaring lion of 1 Peter 5 will be devoured by the lion of Judah. He'll be stripped of all power. He'll be banished not to rule but to be punished. But it takes place at the cross of Calvary. If you're not a child of God this morning, you are at a juncture in your life. You're at a point where you're either going to take Satan seriously this morning and do something to combat him, or you're going to cuddle up beside him and walk out of here partners with him. If you need to know more about him, if you need to know more about the plan of salvation, please respond and let us know that. If you do understand the plan of salvation already, if you know that you need to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and that you need to put him on in baptism through repentance and confession, come this morning. Banish Satan from your life. Begin your walk with the Son of God as we stand and sing.